have to manage the activity. You can't manage results. If you try to manage results, you're too late.
I'm one of the top sales coaches in home services.
Everybody that wins, they win because of coaching. They also lose because of coaching.
The importance of discipline, process, and leadership in scaling sales teams.
This is one of the only industries that you can bring somebody in and it doesn't matter where they came from. They can be successful.
Here's what makes this conversation powerful.
And I will tell you, a majority of what we have been taught over the years is not true.
This is AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros, the show for contractors who want to grow without wasting time or money. If you're in roofing, HVAC, plumbing, or any home service business, we break down how AI and modern marketing can help you book more jobs, close more leads, and build a business that runs without babysitting every task.
Today's episode is about sales and how AI is changing the game for contractors. My guest is Chuck Tokey, founder of Top Rep and one of the top sales coaches in home services. Chuck believes sales is actually easy, but most contractors have been trained the wrong way for years. Here's what makes this conversation powerful. Chuck has access to over 3.5 million recorded sales calls, plus cutting-edge AI tools that actually analyze what really works in the home. He's using AI role play simulators, call recordings, and data-driven insights to uncover the truth about closing deals. In this episode, you'll learn why so much old school sales training is flat out wrong, how AI is helping sales leaders see exactly what reps are doing right and wrong inside the home, the importance of discipline, process, and leadership in scaling sales teams, and how contractors can use these tools to train smarter, not harder. If you ever wonder how AI can actually improve your sales team, not replace them, this episode would open your eyes. Let's dive into my conversation with Chuck Tokey. Hey, Chuck, how's it going?
It is going very well. Going very well. Glad to be here.
I'm super excited to have you in the podcast, man. We met a few years ago, just excited about your journey. And all the success you've had in recent years has been amazing.
You know, I don't know if you know this, but you and I go back, gosh, when you and I first started talking, I want to say it was like 6-7 years ago. I saw something that you had posted or done something, and I was very interested. So I've kind of been following you since. So it's been fun to watch.
Yeah. One thing that I didn't do was I actually was posting content a long time ago, but I really stopped, and that's really my fault. And now I'm back on, and I really want to share the things that I've learned. And I'm excited to have, you know, just kind of circle back on that whole journey.
Excellent.
Yeah. So let's start. So Chuck, you said that sales is easy, right? Most contractors have been trained the wrong way. Why do you believe that? And what are companies doing today that's wrong for them to do? Like what are companies getting wrong today about sales?
Well, here's the problem is that for years and years, sales trainers have done everything they can to make it as difficult or as complicated as possible. And they've really tried to make it so that you're dependent on them. And what we have found, so we are one of the only coaches in the country that have access to over right now it's like 3.5 million recordings, all the data and all the AI that comes with it. And because we're trying to figure out, we set out on this journey to figure out what's true, what's false about everything we've ever been taught. And I will tell you, a majority of what we have been taught over the years is not true. But what I have found is not that it's just a shot in the dark. What I have found, even going back to some of these big older trainers, and they're like, hey, the biggest thing is that we have to sell ourselves, right? And I'm like, yeah. And so what we need to do is make that complicated so that you continue to have to come back to us. And I'm like, it's almost scary to think about, but now that we have the ability to cut out all the crap, that we have made it so easy for sales reps to be successful these days. And there's a lot of trainers right now that they're still just training all the old stuff. And so they're still making things more complicated than it has to be. But what we are finding inside of a lot of these organizations that we walk into, and we move things somewhat slowly. We don't come in and say, okay, everybody stop. We move things somewhat slowly so that we don't mess with people's comfort zones. It's good that you walk outside your comfort zone, but we want to show you an easier path to follow. But it is a bit of a different path that we have found in some of these organizations. And that is what's pulled some of them out of their comfort zone again, is that it's easier, it's just a little bit different. And so they're still having to come out of their comfort zone. It is a lot easier than what people are making it.
What are the most common things that make it harder, you think, that people are keep saying right now today?
So one of the big issues is that, you know, they're putting training out. It's like mirroring. Mirroring being, I'm going to mirror you. If I'm going to sell you, I'm going to mirror you. That is a known fact of that it is false. So mirroring actually is you mirroring me. If I'm doing my job in the house and I get that trust, that credibility, that I'm memorable, that I have really pulled you in, that when I lean up on the table, that the homeowner leans in, not me. Okay, it's not the other way around. And so we have worked with this hypnotist. Now, not that we're trying to hypnotize anybody, but what we found is that when you're doing your job in the house, that the homeowner, it's like going into a trance where they are so in tune with what you're doing, what you're saying, that they don't even know that they're doing it. That when you go up and you move up and you're ready to either give price or go through some sort of presentation, like an engaged presentation, that they move up with you. When you lean back, then they lean back. At that point, you know that you have them in this ability to close them down. You still have to do your job. But that's the whole thing with mirroring, is it has nothing to do with you mirroring them. That is false. It's bad information. It, all that is a goofy game of Simon Says, is what that turns out to be. And if you have a homeowner that knows what you're doing, it could be, not only can it be bad, but two, they'll play with you. You know, they'll move to the other side. And I've seen it in the house. We have watched this in the house. And I towards the end of the presentation, I'll ask, hey, what do you do for a living? I'm a car salesman. I'm like, I thought you would be. You know, they're in sales. They've been taught these poor sales tactics in the past. The other thing is what they call a yes train. If I can just get that homeowner saying yes, that they'll keep saying yes. Marisa, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And it does not work. It doesn't do anything for you. But somebody that was on stage speaking thought that that would have been a pretty good strategy to give at some point. And so now, you know, if I can just, you know, get them saying yes, they'll keep saying yes. No, they won't. But what we have found through data is that if I can get them saying no, I can keep them moving forward. What I mean by no, and so one of our coaches, people that work with us, is Chris Voss. And so we wanted to test this theory out because, you know, with him, he's teaching people how to say no, that actually means a yes. And I'm like, that sounds really good, but we need to teach this, or not teach it, we need to test this theory. And through like Rilla and Ciro, where we have access to this data, that, you know, we have found over and over and over again that it works. The yeses, what happens there is it actually creates distance. When I'm trying to get that homeowner to keep saying yes, nodding their head, then I'm actually creating distance to the point where it's fight or flight. I'm asking for commitments and they're like slowly backing away from me. But if I say, hey, would it be a crazy idea? Would you be against, you know, these types of no questions? They are willing to give me the answer that I want, that we can keep moving forward. And so that works so much better than this yes stuff that doesn't work. So again, there's a lot of stuff that is being taught, being trained. And still today, a lot of these trainers, I wouldn't even call them coaches, they're trainers. There's a huge difference between coach and trainer. A lot of these trainers out there that are still teaching a lot of these old techniques that don't work, you know. And what I feel is humorous is when I go back to some of these older, bigger trainers that had come out with this stuff, and I say, hey, did you know? And they're like, yeah, we knew that 20 years ago. I said, but you still keep teaching it. And they're like, Yeah, but people keep buying it. And I'm like, this is wrong. So again, you know, that's when it comes to what Top Rep is doing is we do the research and then we bring it in to that into the industry.
How do you actually train? I guess it's easy to learn about that, but it's harder to implement. I guess it's just comes with practice, right? I guess you have to, because training someone versus training a team is different. It's actually because I've experienced myself, because I can see it and understand it on a level, but it's actually implementing and practicing is a different thing, right? How do you overcome that?
I'm glad you mentioned this. So earlier this morning, we had one of our larger clients. They have over 20 sales managers, and one of them brought this up as, Chuck, I have all these sales reps. You know, this sales manager's down in Texas, and he's got 25 sales reps. And he says, man, everybody, it's like herding cats. I can't seem to get them all doing the same thing because they all have difference of opinions. And then once I get them to do something and it works, they still come back. I says, they're coming back to a comfort zone. And so what needs to happen is that you have to manage the activity, okay? You can't manage results. If you try to manage results, you're too late.
Because you get false positives, right?
That's why. Yeah, exactly. And so we want to manage the activity. We call this, and to the sales reps, do your job. And your job is you have to go through this process. Now, and I can go on a rabbit hole on this, but I will mention, people say, oh, the 8 or 9 step. The only reason why you have these step systems is to keep a sales rep on track. If not, they're going to, it is natural human nature to shortcut as much as you can. And so then on their drive home, they have 20 minutes to realize that they killed their own sale because they didn't have a process or they didn't use the process they were given. Now, going back to this, we want this, that everybody singing the same song, moving in the same direction. And so we create the activities and we manage those activities. Inside of Top Rep, we have key competencies. And it's everything that a sales rep must do when they're in an appointment to be successful. It's all the basics, if you will. And so once they've mastered that, then we have to bring in discipline. You know, it's one thing to hold a sales rep accountable, but can you imagine if they were all disciplined, you wouldn't have to hold them accountable. And so this is, if you've ever seen a lot of these very successful sales organizations, they'll have a lot of these big muscle bound guys. They are so disciplined because they're going into the gym. I hate going to the gym. There's no doubt. I am not one of those big muscle bound, but they are very disciplined people. And this is why they are successful. It's not, some of them are very smart, but it's not because they're smart. It's because they're disciplined. And so if we can find sports, people that come out of sports, especially wrestling's one of the big ones, or these bodybuilders, people that are naturally disciplined to do something day in and day out, they will be successful in this field because this field takes consistency and discipline. And so we manage the activity, we teach discipline, and then we get the results. Once we get the results, then belief sets in. But it has to be over and over and over because they can believe it works and still come back to their comfort zone.
Yeah, I mean, that's very common. I see a lot of times, I've managed reps for a long time, is that a lot of times they close a deal even though they did the wrong thing. And like, it's something that you have to understand, hey, this is, sometimes it's luck, honestly. It's just luck, or you did whatever, they liked something about you, whatever it was. At the end of the day, you did something incorrectly, but you still close the deal, and it gives you, hey, I did this the right this way. It worked before. Why not it worked this time? But it's not. It's gonna increase your percentage. What I tell reps is basically like, all you try to do is manage your own process, right, in order to increase the conversions rate, right? Ideally, increase the conversion rate to whatever you can get it. But at the end of the day, that's what you're trying to control. You can't control if it's gonna close or not, but you control your own process, right? And that's why you try to teach, because it's hard, because people, they go back, it's human nature, right? Exactly what you said. They go back, sometimes that's why it's easier sometimes to train new people in the industry. They don't have the baggage, right? Like how do you overcome that? Like some people are just, I guess the trainability is a big, coachability is a big factor, right? How do you talk about that? That's something you can mention about that, yeah.
We like people with experience, there's no doubt. There is a derogatory term that we call some of these people that have a lot of experience. We call them retreads, and it's derogatory. I get it. You know, these people that this is, you know, your company is the fourth company that they have sold roofing, siding, windows, whatever it might be. And so therefore they have experience, but like you say, they also have baggage. They have things that they've learned and they have set into a comfort zone. So they may be very, very successful with an organization that they started with, and all those companies afterwards, for whatever reason, they were okay successful. The first one, they were extremely successful. And then they thought there was a whole new world out there. So they left and they went into somebody else, and then they were okay. Here's why, is because they went into these other organizations and those other organizations thought it was okay to be okay. And then they get to your organization and you just hope that they are decent. You see how this keeps going down, right? And so you want to find out how good they really are and how coachable they are. If inside your organization, you like things a certain way, don't just bring people in that know how to sell. Bring people in that match your culture, that they're coachable. They may have a lot of experience, but they're willing to listen and do things your way. The sales reps don't understand that it's not their company. I'm going to say this again. Sales reps don't understand that's not their company. And they need to do things the way that that owner, that manager needs things done. Sales reps like to come in and try to call the shots because they can sell. I will tell you that when I bring a new sales rep in that I know is very experienced, we are going to have a discussion about this is our company. We do things our way. I love the experience that you're bringing, because when you go in the house, you know how to have a conversation, but you are still going to have that conversation the way we want you to have it. And when you see big organizations, and not these big organizations with PE, okay? I'm talking organically big organizations like Able Roof. I worked at Able. I was the head of sales at Able, and we grew that very quickly. And so the reason why is because I moved anybody. And some of these guys that we let go, they were very good at sales. They just were not culture for us. But yet the reason why we were able to grow are people that were willing to learn our sales methodology and sing the same song as everyone else in the organization. And that is why we dominated the Columbus, Cincinnati, I mean, all eight locations, because of the fact that we all did the same thing. So again, you bring these guys and gals in with all this baggage, you really need to stop with do they know how to sell, and start with, are they the culture, or would they match the culture that we're trying to build in this organization? They may be champions, but not right for you. And then the people that are right for you, they may not be complete champions, but they're really good and they want to be better. Those are people that will be consistent. I want reps that are consistent. I hate top rep. I hate these top reps that are just roller coaster reps. You know, they're Donald Trump one minute. They want to go stand in a food line the next minute. Just trying to figure these people out can give you a headache.
Yeah. Yeah, you worked in a lot of different different industries, right? Different trades. What have you learned about selling across different industries, and what do they all have in common?
So first and foremost, sales is the same across all industries. Well, inside of home improvement, and in many cases, home services. You know, they're two different worlds. Is home services and home improvement are two different worlds, but very similar when it comes to sales. When we can teach, a plumber how to talk in a house and watch his success go through the roof. Same thing that we do with roofers, baths, kitchens, doesn't matter.
Yeah, there's a difference between having a want and a need, right? Like it's a need-based industry, like maybe plumbing, right? Roofing, I would say roofing, versus a want, which is kitchen and bath and remodeling. What is the difference between those two?
So a want is an easier sale, by the way. It is an easier sale and typically larger sale. The problem that you'll have is you won't have as many leads many times. With roofing, you can be poured with leads and you're going to need big teams in many cases. With baths and kitchens, not so much. It's a different marketing tactic. You're going to have less referrals when it comes to that. With roofing, you're going to have a lot of referrals because typically an event happens where a lot of people in the same area need you all at once. And when that's not the case, referrals can be a little tougher to come by. You can still ask for them. There's many ways of asking for them, but not everybody needs you all at once.
Got it. So you say actually selling a want is actually easier than a need.
It's so much easier than selling a need. Remember, when somebody needs something, they didn't plan for it. So they're trying to figure out. You're going to have a lot more turndowns. If you use financing, you're going to have a lot more turndowns on needs. Not always, but in many cases it will be. And it's tougher because they don't want to part with the money. Where for a want, it's easier to part with the money because they were expecting to.
Interesting. Very interesting. And I'm assuming probably the marketing is different too. I know the marketing is different, but I'm assuming that from a want base, right, it's more aspirational, right? And they're coming in because of whatever reason. And it's different than a need where it's like, hey, like I needed something right away. It's like, that's the biggest kind of the difference I ought to say. You say that success starts with leadership, like not just sales reps. Like, why is training leaders the first step in scaling sales?
So if you look at Major League or NFL, everybody that wins, they win because of coaching. They also lose because of coaching. We say that that team was out-coached, and there could have been some lucky plays. When somebody's like, oh, it's all about the players. Well, who chose those players? Who picked those players? Those coaches. Who kept those players? The coaches. Who benched the ones that shouldn't be on the field? The coaches. So again, they were out-coached, or they coached their team to a win. And so, you know, it's the same thing with sales leadership. I'm coming out with a field guide for sales leaders in the next couple of months, and you'll see how this plays out. And when we get in and we start working with, whether they're very big organizations or all the way down to owner-operator organizations, we show them how important the leadership truly is. They think that, man, if I can just go out and get some killers, that's what I hear all the time. Man, if I can just go out and get some killers, I'm like, your killers are going to do nothing but kill leads. You know, so, you know, you watch this, you know, what going out and getting people, make sure you go out and get the right people. Make sure you go out and get the right leader. If you're not good with sales leadership or you're not good with sales, go find somebody. And it may be expensive. I get it. I had to do the same thing when Top Rep was a little bit smaller. We had to go out and find somebody that had the time. I'm really good at it. I just don't have, there's only so many hours in a day. And you know, with as many people as we were helping, I needed someone else that minded the front door, right? And so we went out and found one of the best in the business, and she's been amazing. And so again, you know, it all starts with leadership and people. You coach yourself to a win. You can't hire yourself out of a loss.
Yeah. When you walk into a new company, what are the signs you look that you see when leadership training is missing?
So the sales leader is typically, people look at, oh, you know, look at the owner. I will look at the owner and you know, what their tendencies can be, but I want to see the sales leader. I want to know what the story is behind the sales leader. Where'd you find him? What's the relationship been like since their first day? That kind of stuff is what is more pertinent to me. And I know, without coming into a sales meeting, a lot of these sales trainers and sales coaches, if they call themselves that, they want to come into a sales meeting. And I do too, after I start to work with the sales leader a little bit. Because many times, I don't even need to see the sales team. I've seen all I need to see with the sales leader. And sometimes it's a really good thing. I have gotten the opportunity to come into many organizations where I am really excited to work with this sales leader. This sales leader is one of the best I've worked with, whatever that case may be. But that's where we start. That's where I know that this is where I need to put some more emphasis. Or he's a good sales leader. She's a good sales leader. Now let's look at the team. Let's figure out what's happened with the team too, so that we understand why their numbers are lower than they should be.
Yeah, this is a common mistake that a lot of business owners make, is making their top rep the sales manager. Can you talk about that? Why sometimes that's the big mistake?
And I'm glad you say sometimes, because it is. I am a top rep. During my time in sales, I've always been, well, not always. When I first started selling, I sucked bad. And I'll tell you why that is so key here in a second. But, I have been a top rep in just about every organization that I have sold in. And for me, my joy comes from watching other people. You know, I get to be successful because they're successful. And so watching lives get changed in our industry, this is one of the only industry that you can bring somebody in and it doesn't matter where they came from. They can be successful. And we find many where they were homeless, not like you might think of a homeless person, but you know, they were sleeping in their car, they got kicked out of the house, they were just on the lowest of low. And within months, they are way up here. They're making more money than they've ever made before. Their lifestyle has completely changed. And you know, so it's one of the only industries that can happen. And so, you know, for any, whether you're good at sales or you're just good at teaching or you're good at coaching, you know, that gives you that opportunity to change lives. But it does not mean that an owner should look at their top sales rep and say, I bet I can clone this person. That will never happen. At least not in my lifetime will I see where you actually clone. You can't take a Mauricio and make another one, you know? And so that's typically what is happening, is if they're really good, they can go out and train everybody else. Here's another thing to think about, is when you look at somebody and you're going to make them a sales leader because they're good at what they do, is it because they were trained to be good, or is it because they're naturally good? Naturally good, and I'm going to get some hate mail on this, but I'm okay with it. Good sales reps make the worst leaders. Why? Because they don't even know why they're good, because they're naturally good at what they do. There's many times I'll go out with these reps that are naturally good, and I say, hey, what is it that makes you so good? Oh, man, I just do me. I don't even know what that means, but for whatever reason, natural sales reps love that saying.
Yeah, I think that's obviously a case. I think it's basically it's charisma, right? It's natural charisma that kind of like, there's naturally very charismatic people and that have that it factor that fortunately some people have, right? And I've seen it firsthand. Like one of my first rep is a very naturally charismatic guy. No training, started closing in the first like a week. Like right with no training. And that happens sometimes, right? But it's not how you build a business. Like it's exactly what you said, right? You need to have a process in place for it to be repeatable. That's a big, big factor, right? You talked about this last time, the importance of training for different lead sources, right? One of the biggest things that I see is obviously a lot of companies say bad things about these lead aggregators, but I see it all these companies use them, right? What are the biggest mistakes that contractors are making when they use these lead aggregators, and how to make sales from them?
We can have a whole podcast on this one. I actually like lead aggregators, and lead aggregators, many of them can fill a hole. You know, if they have a marketing company, maybe the marketing company has kind of hit a slump. I mean, they're working as hard as they can. Most of them, they're working as hard as they can, but there's a small lull. That's one of the only things that you can do to turn things up is to go to like HomeBuddy, Modernize. Oh gosh, I can't think of all of them. Thumbtack and Porch and all these other ones. You can go and turn up the leads. And I would suggest that you go through, there's several different organizations that can verify those leads, like Active Prospect, there's Panda something, but there's certain things that you can do to verify those leads, that they're not old leads, that they didn't buy it from somebody else that was 2 weeks old. But you can turn your leads up and you can turn them down. And if you do use those, you have to be ready for them. You can't just be a small organization where you're being the owner, you're the one that sets all the leads. Don't ever go to a lead aggregator if you're an owner and you're the one that sets all the leads. Because it used to be, have you heard this one? You have 5 minutes before it's obsolete. Today, it's 30 seconds. 30 seconds. That lead has already been booked by 2 to 5 others. And so, and it all depends on how much you pay. But remember this as well. Some of them will tell you that they're exclusive leads. What I'm going to tell you is if they went and clicked on their ad or whatever it is that they clicked on so that, that aggregator can get their name, address, and phone number, they clicked on four or five others. So now you don't have to worry about the fact that HomeBuddy or any of the other ones had sold it to other people. There's three others that they signed up for as well, and they're being called by all them too. So whether you have an exclusivity or not, I mean, they're still having other people giving them a call.
Yeah, the way I see it is lead aggregators, I think the impact on the industry has been immense. Basically, what's happened is that a lot of these guys, they expect instant gratification. And they think that they're used to buying leads. That's really the mentality. And they think marketing is the same thing, which is a very different strategy, right? So if you have your back end, your back office, your appointments, setters, your all that stuff, like, well, you can actually use lead aggregators to sell your business. And all the big companies are using them. Every single one of them use them, right? Because they need volume. And that's, I think, the fastest way to get volume is through these companies. And you're not going to get volume through Google Ads, or you can, but it's going to take a little bit of time to get there, especially if you're starting from scratch. So that's the difference. And that's kind of the mindset you have to understand, that difference in the impact. These guys have been used to buying leads since the 1990s, right? They're used to that immediate impact, immediate dopamine, right? There's a lot of bad things about these companies, but at the end of the day, I think they have, HomeAdvisor got complaint by, they got sued, all the stuff, but I think a lot of these guys just don't know how to use them correctly, right? And we talked about this last time. You had a specific strategy for HomeAdvisor for Able Roofing that had a huge impact. Can you talk about that specific strategy and how you were successful with that?
Yeah, and we still teach it today. There's a lot of organizations that still use it today very successfully. And first and foremost, again, it is the whole speed to lead. So we are on this within 30 seconds. We're already talking with that homeowner. And we're going to lock this homeowner down. But we're also going to let them know, hey, Mary, while we're on the phone, you may hear someone trying to beep in. Don't worry. All it is it's HomeAdvisor just calling to verify that we did our job and that we've set you up with an estimate. I'm going to give them a call as soon as I'm off of this call with you. I'm going to give them a call and let them know you're taken care of. So you don't have to worry about, checking your messages or anything like that. We've got it all taken care of. But yet we're going to go ahead and lock this appointment down. Also, we're going to set that appointment no later than 72 hours. So we're going to have 3 days, the next 3 days. We also do a lot of same day appointments, depending on how big you are and how well you book your appointments. We try to book same days as well. So from anywhere between this afternoon and this evening, that's where we start. And then we ask, we still have a couple of available, we have a 2 o'clock tomorrow, but I also have a 6 o'clock on Thursday, which would be best for you. So we're going to lock them down and then we're going to start in on our confirmation process. So if it's either today or tomorrow, we're going to let them know that this is their confirmation. But if it's more than that, if it's the following 2 days, then we let them know that we're going to follow up and confirm that within 24 hours.
I'm just curious about this. Do you have a specific strategy depending on if it's a Google lead inbound phone call, right? And a form submission on Facebook. Yeah, I think you talked about that last time. You have to have a different strategy for each, right?
You do. And how you take the information, not so much. But again, if it is a call-in, then we answer the phone in a certain way. We do not say, thanks for calling Top Rep. How can I help you? That is not how we answer the phone. We're going to answer the phone. Hey, it's a great day here at Top Rep. How can I make you smile? That is how we answer the phone. And we get clients are like, you want me to answer what? And it's like, you have to look at, this is what we call a pattern interrupt. When somebody hears that, if maybe they've had a tough day, maybe they've had a bad experience with your installer and they're calling in, or maybe they've been trying to book an appointment, but you hadn't made it all that easy. That pendulum will shift so that they can't yell at you. They can't be mad at you. And that call goes so much smoother when you use that pattern interrupt.
Yeah, it's something very common in the home services industry. You know, home services, home improvement, a lot of these other companies, they train the CSR. Extremely important to train the CSR to make sure they set the appointment with the correct tech, with whatever the right route, right? It's important to have the right route, making sure that's approved and all that stuff. And obviously using the technology behind it to make sure that's all like set up correctly. I have like my opinion on this. I want to hear your opinion on this. What is a good conversion rate? Like, does it matter? Like you try to go for a, I think my opinion is, I want to share my opinion. If it's too high of a conversion rate, then your pricing might be too low, right? If it's too low a conversion rate, then your pricing might be too high. What is your opinion about that? What is a good conversion rate? I guess it depends on the platform. What is your thoughts on that?
So I'm guessing what you're talking about is the close rate, and you're right. Depending on the sales reps, if it's really high, I would raise the your pricing, but don't get to the point, because we've gotten several clients. We've got many clients that their close rate is in the high 60s, low 70s, and they're like, Chuck, we almost would be teetering on ethical, because they're all over 70-75% gross margin. Now, it depends on your industry, because some people may be listening at like 70-80%. Well, those are like your painters, your coating company, bath company. But then even on our roofing companies, we have several that are over 65-70%, and their close rates are in the 60s. And they're like, you know, Chuck, it says I'm supposed to, because our close rate is so high. So it doesn't mean it's a rule of thumb, but if you're closing at 60%+, and if you're in roofing, if you're still in that 35-40% gross margin, yeah, you have some room to grow. You know, if your close rate is way down, and you know, you're at a 60-70% gross margin, maybe you want to bring it back down out of the sky. You know, so, you know, I think that a sweet spot for roofing is anywhere between 40-55% is a really good sweet spot for roofing. I know that there's going to be some, and this is going to be very derogatory. You can cuss me out on Messenger if you want, but if you are still selling at, you know, sub 400s a square, you just suck. I mean, you really do. Your team sucks. You suck. Yeah. And they might think, well, it's these other companies out here, you know, they've already set the tone at that 350 to 400. And that is just poor management. You know, now you're just relying on your, you know, everybody's relying on their rebates just to make money. And it's like, who wants that? Who wants to make money based on their rebates? But again, rabbit holes all over the place that we can go down.
Yeah. Speaking of rebates, right? I heard you on a podcast talking about having a marketing rebate. Can you talk about that strategy? Right? How do you like implement that to close new prospects?
So rebates. I like marketing rebates better than a marketing agreement. We've kind of moved to the rebate. Remember, with a rebate, you have to do something to get something. And I'm talking about the homeowner. So if I want them to allow us to take before and after pictures, put a yard sign in, give us a review, take a picture with a 100% satisfied sign, you know, those types of things, they need to do that before we pay them. And so with a marketing agreement, it's just you agree to do these things down the road, which they may do half of them. So we do give them a discount to be able to do that type of stuff. So we really want that in return, and you should be able to hold that homeowner's feet to the fire on this. And so, you know, have an actual rebate form. And when we're selling to that homeowner, we let them know, like, Bob and Mary, typically we don't actually even bring this up until after we have a work order signed. However, we're not that far apart. And some people laugh because we're like 10 grand apart, you know, from where they want to be and where we are. We're not that far apart. So what I want to do is kind of share this rebate program with you. Would you like to hear more about it? I haven't had a guest that said, no, I don't want to hear about that. You know, they're like, yeah, we'd love to hear about it. So inside of the rebate, typically you have to do something to get something, right? Well, if this is stuff that you would agree and, you know, to do now, and we can bring the money into this and bring the price of this job way down, would that be something you'd be interested in? Like, well, we're interested in hearing about it. There's no doubt. Great. And so I'm going to go through each one of those, and it feels a lot more real, and it should be. You should still hold them to what they agreed to. But, the rebate has worked out so much better than, say, an agreement. Because with the agreement, we get, well, why wouldn't you have gone through that with me when you presented the price? Because we use this rebate as a tool if we can't seem to get them on our 30-day price, if you will. And then we bring this up like, hey, typically we don't bring this up until. So it gives us an out as to them coming at us with, why couldn't I have given them that price? And it's not a big discount. It is not, you're not taking 50% off because they agreed to do this stuff. It has to be reasonable. They have to believe you. You know, we've gone past the old knowledge of people buy from people they know, like, and trust, which is true. I mean, if they know and they like you and they trust you, yeah, they probably buy from you. But what we have found is if you teach your sales reps that people buy from people they trust, believe, and remember, now all of a sudden, as long as they remember that in their head, that these people, if I can get them to trust me, believe in what I'm saying, and get them to remember me, I can get this job. And now that's a true, you know, that's something that will actually help you sell. And so obviously we want them to believe in what we are saying, whether it is our price assurance guarantee or pledge, or it's the marketing rebate. We want them to believe that this is an actual thing, not just something that we threw out there to get them to buy.
And is that like part of the proposal, or is that like separate paperwork? How does that typically work?
And we suggest that you make it a separate piece of paper. It's something they have to sign. It's something that they are agreeing to. It's like a whole other contract, if you will, that if I do this, if I bring the price down, then you're going to do these things.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. So let's talk about AI. Top Rep is using AI role play simulators. You know, how do they work? What makes them more effective than traditional training?
So we have been working on our simulator for just about 2 years now, and we've continued to perfect it as we've gone along. And it's we've gotten help from many different top AI companies on how we're going to put this thing in. A lot of the engineers that we're working with to put this together. And so now it's a lot like if you have Rilla, Xero, you know, Sales Ask, any of those, you have this whole scorecard based on how fast you talked, what you said. You know, there's a whole scorecard there. And now we have the exact same thing with our simulator, and it's all done through AI. And so now you don't have to practice on the homeowner. You can practice on our AI, and there's four different levels. You know, there's easy, neutral, then there's hard, and then there's, for lack of a better term, an asshole. You know, the guy doesn't even want you in his house. He doesn't even know why you're there. You know, so you have the opportunity, and sales managers can assign so that the sales reps aren't always taking the easy road. You know, maybe today I'm going to send them, a guy's name's Derek. He is just really mean. And so I'm going to send him Derek. I want to see how he does with Derek. And we suggest that they do 3 simulations in the morning to get ready for their day. Sales is a momentum game. It's a game in the house, but it's a momentum game overall. So if I'm winning, I can keep winning. It's funny how when sales reps are doing really well, they continue to do well. It's mindset is really where it comes down. And so we want to put them into the right frame of mind early on in the day so that when they go to their first appointment, they've already sold 3. Now, you can't cash those checks, but you know, they've already closed 3 AI people down.
That's awesome. That's awesome. How AIs you're using it to record some of the meetings, right? Some of these tools like Rilla allow you to start recording what's happening inside the home. What are some of the things that you found with those recordings, with that data?
We've partnered with 3 of them, the 3 largest companies that do those types of recordings. And we love how fast they keep growing and the different thing. You know, Rilla has come out with Live. So a sales manager can hear live what's actually going on in the house, and you can do a TO call right there. A TO call is when a sales manager jumps in and tries to close the job because you can't. And so there's so many things that you can do with this type of technology now that just 6 months ago you couldn't. That's how fast this is growing. And we use this in our coaching. So all of our coaching clients, they have the ability to use any of the three, because we have our professional. His name is Mike Alvarado, and he listens to over 300 ride-alongs a month. And so he goes through it and tries to figure out what's going on with these reps. And he uses AI. He can go through a two-hour meeting in 2 minutes. Now, he knows exactly what he's looking for. He knows what his markers are. He knows the questions to ask AI to really pull out the data he needs to work with over 20 different companies that we have at any given time that we are helping the manager to manage their people with these ride-alongs. And so there's so much that companies can do. Now, I'm going to tell you, Mauricio, that most sales managers that have these, they're lazy. They won't get into it. And when they do, they'll listen to maybe one or two and then they find something else to do. They have to have that expectation that they're going to sit down for a certain amount of time every single day and go through their recordings and figure out what are they going to do about these. Are they going to make some notes and send them out? And those notes better be positive notes. You do not put a negative note when you are sending somebody feedback. You do not put negative feedback. That sales rep will stop recording. You know, they'll sit there with their middle finger up. They'd rather do that, you know, than to sit there and record and wait for a negative feedback to keep coming back. You know, so you have to train the sales managers just as much as you need to train the sales reps when using that. But I would say that as of today, using one of those softwares is imperative that you do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for us, we record our meetings, our calls through Zoom and through HubSpot. So it's funny now, like it's coming, that kind of technology is coming into the home services space because it's mostly door to door. It's like person to person, right? So it's a little bit different sale. Now you have access to managers, right? The sales leaders have access to that data and they can allow them to make better decisions about their reps, right? Because before, I think it was just basically they know if they closed it or not, right? Or the objections or whatever, then based on notes, I think, if it took notes, right? Now you have that data. Is there anything that they can learn from in terms of common things that they like, okay, I thought, you know, my reps were doing this, but now instead of they're doing that, like what are the common things that they found with this data?
I would say one of the most common is they are skipping the same steps. That's probably the most common. These sales reps talk so fast in the house. We have sales organizations because we get bombarded with a large number of them, and we do as much as we can when it comes to coaching. We can only do one-on-one coaching for so many at a time. And so we'll get some to say, hey, I need you to jump into our sales meeting. Something's wrong. You know, I don't know why we're really not doing well closing. And so what we will do before we jump in, say, hey, can you do me a favor first? I need you to go in to your sales meeting and start working with your sales team to slow it down in the house. Just really slow it down. Don't tell them why. Just tell them, I'm urging all of you, when I'm listening to your calls, you don't care if you're not listening, we are, I need you to slow it down in the house. And then all of a sudden, the next phone call is, hey, we're back up. Everything's good, Chuck. I'm glad that we found it. Whether they give us the credit or not, we knew it was wrong. We knew that because what happens is when you're not closing, you get frustrated, right? There's some anxiety, correct? Well, if you get frustrated and have anxiety because you're not closing, your speed of speech starts to raise and your pitch gets higher. What happens is people stop buying from those types of people. You know, we teach the sales conversation. That's why we have been so successful in the industry is we'll teach the scripts, and the scripts are big. But what's even bigger is understanding how to have the sales conversation. And it's not just understanding tone and pause. It's understanding when tone and pause needs to come in. And that's why, you know, that's what we teach.
And AI helps you with understand that better, right? With the actual recordings. Okay. Got it. And what are the biggest mistakes that they're making with tonality typically that you see reps do?
They talk too fast. Their voice is too high. They're confident. They bring confidence out, or the confident voice or tone out when it shouldn't be. Because if you are too confident at certain times, just an asshole, you know, or at least you perceive to be one. At certain times of the appointment, we need to be fun. Certain times we need to be confident, and other times we need to be compassionate, which means we call it the homeowner going low and slow, smoking meat, low and slow.
So what are the comments? You said compassionate, right? What are the tonalities you said? Challenging, right? Or
so we have fun or your child. Okay, yeah. Then we have a confident tone.
Okay.
And then we have our compassionate tone.
Got it. Okay. Got it. We talked about this last time. You said this year has been really tough in the home service space, a lot of with roofing companies as well. A lot of them are just dropping with like flies. You call them like the COVID companies. Why do you think a lot of them have not seen, has been successful this year versus past years?
So for one, a lot of these companies are used to the COVID years where there's an abundance of leads. And if you don't close that one, there's another one coming in right behind it. And these are what we call COVID companies. Now, there's a lot of COVID companies that get it and they're doing extremely well. A majority of them are not, because they did well because they showed up. And now you got to do a whole lot more than just show up. You can't just put the shingle out and wait for the people to start calling you anymore. You know, these people, these organizations that have been in business before COVID, they get it. You know, they're like, all right, this isn't a bad economy. This is going back to the way things were before we had to start wearing masks and staying home.
Got it. What do you think separates the companies that survive tough markets versus the ones that don't?
The people that don't survive tough markets, those are typically the guys and gals that are out spending money. You know, you're watching them with their Lamborghinis and stuff like this. And, you know, they're spending money faster than they can make it. You know, I heard Tommy Mello say once, or maybe I read it in one of his books. I really like Tommy. I like a lot of his teachings and a lot of his experience. But he mentioned that even when he was able to buy the restaurant that he was eating in, he still would eat at home and eat ramen noodles if he had to, because he kept putting the money back into the business. And I'm like, that means so much when it comes to cash flow. It means so much when it comes to being a good business owner. I think it was Simon Sinek that said that that leaders eat last. And again, it's feeding the business, not feeding yourself. Everybody wants to be that savage. You know, they want to be the one that can jump out on the on social media. We have there's a guy, there's a marketer, and you know, he's training everybody in the world. He's out in Dubai doing this, that, and the other. What people don't know is that dude is flat broke. You know, but everybody thinks that this guy has just money rolling out of his ears. He's got he's got pictures of cars and all these travels, and it's like, man, you know, and everybody else knows that he's broke, you know, but you know, he thinks that, or any of these companies that are doing this, is they think that they're putting their best foot forward, that everybody wants to be like them. It's like, yeah, they do, but many people are smart enough to understand that just give you a couple of months or give you a bad month and you're going to sink.
Yeah, that's common with a lot of the online course creators. It's very common in Miami. I'm in Miami. That is very common situation. Honestly, what they're trying to do is just sell lifestyle. And they most of the time they don't know what they're doing or talking about. Typically, let's talk about Expert Roofing, right, in Portland, right? You wanted to share this case study, right? What changed after working with Top Rep, and what contractors can learn from it specifically?
So there's a company, and you could see it on our YouTube channel. There's a company that, and this is typical for people that come to us, but you can see the entire viewpoint on where we were and what it looked like. And we have actually two case studies that you can watch the entire process on YouTube. But with this company, it's called Expert Roofing out of, they're near Portland, or I think it's called Eugene, Oregon. But they had a very rough go of it. They've been in this business for 30 some years. I think it was 35 years. And they saw me at a GAF event. And so we talked there, and we decided to start working together. And what I asked for them to do is to go see a company that we took that was struggling, and that had been in business a while, and that they were large all of a sudden over the course of 5 to 6 years. They gotten very large. The other company was the most profitable roofer in the United States. And so I'd asked Jim and Amber, I says, hey, I need you to fly out. I need you to meet with John and Sherry of O'Leary Roofing. And so they picked up the phone and they called him. I'm like, okay, Jim, I need you to fly out and I need you to visit with John and Sherry. I want you to see for yourself where you guys are going. And so they did, and that was a life-changing moment. It's not always the coaching that we give. Sometimes it is the connections that we give them or send them out to so they can see what success looks like and that we can get to work right after. And so that was a life-changing moment because a lot of his mindset was rooted in the fact that he had to have all of his roofers on staff. I says, that is killing you to have all your roofers on staff. They paid him hourly. And so he got an opportunity to see a whole different side. And so it really changed the way that he did things. And then we started working on the coaching. And it was, you know, with the with O'Leary, it took us, you know, 5 years to get them to be this big. With them, just over a year. And now they're on their third location. You know, they had one location and had a really hard time, and now they're on their third location, and we're just over a year, and they continue to grow. And so you'll see a lot of crying in it because it's, for, I think a lot of the crying is that finally they have gotten into this piece where they're financially set up. You know, that they're not waiting on the next job to try and pay this bill and that bill and to try to keep cash flow going. You know, the other, I think, when you look at a lot of our clients that cry when we do testimonials with them or whatever, is I can't believe that it took me this long to find out just how easy this is. You know, and so, you know, again, it's just doing the right process. You know, somebody asked me not long ago that, hey, you know, you were in with Able, and when you first got there, it was at 60 million. When you left, it's over 220 million. And so he says, could you do another 220 million? I says, yeah. And the reason why is because I know what it looks like. I know what the plan was to get there. And so, yeah, you know, it, and this is why a lot of the larger organizations come to us, because we are one of the only coaches that have been there in the past. We know what it looks like.
Yeah. I have a question. I've been asking questions the whole time, but I'm curious, like, what do you, like, this is a very common thing, right? A lot of contractors have a bad taste with marketing agencies. If they've hired them before, they've had mixed results, bad results, etc. It's a very common complaint. A lot of them have been burned. Obviously a lot of marketing agencies do overpromise and underdeliver. But what do you think contractors need to have in place for them to be successful when they hire a marketing agency before?
So with a contractor that's going to hire a marketing agency, I am not big on marketing agencies that do a lot of things. I feel like everybody can do one thing really well, and they can do other things okay. And I've gotten a lot of pushback from marketing agencies, and I've never gotten pushback on this from companies, big or small. And they're like, hallelujah, brother. And that's usually what I get from companies, because they know it's true. And so when we hire a marketing agency, I say, if you're going to hire a marketing, make sure that if you're going to hire them for a for your website, that they do websites better than anybody else. And then if you're going to hire somebody for a for your social media, that you hire somebody specifically for your social media. And you can hold them to it. You can't, if you have a marketing agency that does, that has a, they do websites, social media, they do mass media, they'll get you on TV, and they do one thing really well and everything else they do all right. It's hard to stand on them and say, man, my TV commercial, it's not doing anything. And then they keep bringing you back, but our website, man, it's just producing so much. So go out and find people that specialize in each thing. Like when we do TV commercials, we go out and find marketing agencies, what they call buyers, because they have a large number that they sell to the networks, and they can give you better pricing, and they understand what you know, they understand that you never go with a network to do your taping. A news network should never be coming out to do your taping. If that's the case, you're just saving money, which is doing nothing but costing you money. Same thing with social media. Is when you hire a marketing agency to do your social media, what you're going to end up with is a lot of generic ads that nobody wants to see and nobody's coming to it. I mean, you need strategists, because that social media strategy is changing over and over and over again, you know? And so same thing, we're getting into, and I think it's the same thing as OTT, but we're getting into a lot of that, and there's no 3-month ramp up. I like it because there isn't a marketing agency can't say, well, we really need 3 months to really see if this thing's going to work. I can see within 2 weeks if CTV or OTT is going to work for me. So again, yeah, they just need to know who they're hiring and what they're getting.
Yeah. Last question. How do you see sales evolving with AI in the next 5 years, with data, leadership, all that?
So over the next 5 years, what you're going to see is a lot of AI telling us what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong. And you're also going to see a lot of humans that won't abide by it. So it's going to go through one ear and out the other. But we're getting into a world right now where we're starting to not trust AI. And you're probably seeing it too, where, you're seeing a lot of people pull back from AI for emails, because it's very easy to see that, well, it looks like they did a really good job with ChatGPT on this one. If you have an email with a lot of emojis in it, I guarantee it's AI. If you have a social post with a lot of emojis in them, it's guaranteed to be AI. You know, people don't have time to put that kind of emoji and that kind of work into a social post. And so it's so easy to see that, and where the trust is starting to come back from AI, but it's going to come back again. You know, it's a lot of these engineers are starting to put different, they're really ramping up on AI. And I think I forgot what they call this. And I think it's Zuckerberg or one of them is leading the charge, but it's going from artificial intelligence to, I think it's called super intelligence. I mean, they're compounding this so that it's more real, it's more more automated. And so, but I don't see within 5 years that, I don't even see within the next 10 to 15 where you'll start to see sales reps get replaced.
Awesome. So where do people find you?
So you can go to topreptraining.com, or you can find us all over the social media. So if you just look up me, Chuck Tokey, T-H-O-K-E-Y, or you can look up Top Rep High Performance Sales Training inside of any of your social media platforms.
Awesome. Chuck, thank you, man. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for listening to AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros. If you got value from today's episode, do us a favor. Follow the show, share it with a contractor friend, and leave a quick review. Want help using AI or smarter marketing to grow your business? Head to contractormarketingpros.net and book your free strategy call.